Welcome back in hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning. Make sure that you're listening in the 9 o'clock hour. We'll have your cue to call for a chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Predators take on the Carolina Hurricanes tonight at Bridgestone Arena. So that coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. But right now, as we have been all morning, spending time talking about the debacle of a day yesterday with the Tennessee football program, the craziness surrounding this program. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our good friend David Ubben from The Athletic. David, how are we doing? Did you get any sleep last night?
Not a ton, but, another day. I got to get used to operating on 3 hours sleep for the next month or so. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's going to be a really fun time for you, David. David, I guess we'll start simply with this. What was your reaction to everything that went down yesterday, and what did you think of that press conference put together by Plowman and Randy Boyd and Philip Fulmer, and just the at times awkward nature of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, things have been trending in this direction, you know, for a while. I mean, I think, you know, since this investigation became public, you know, talking to people, since, you know, a couple days after that A&M game, you know, I haven't talked to anybody who really thought these guys were coming back next year. I mean, there was certainly a lot of pessimism regarding, you know, Jeremy Pruitt being Tennessee's head coach in 2021. The odds were against that for quite some time. You know, you never know how things can play out. But then, of course, yesterday, you know, Tennessee laid it on pretty thick. You know, sort of blaming Jeremy Pruitt for a lot of the issues that had come up in the program, and didn't talk really at all about wins and losses. We talked mostly about, you know, these improprieties in the investigation. And then, of course, you see his lawyer after the fact coming in, calling it an orchestrated effort, all of these things. And, you know, yesterday was, it felt a little bit like the beginning of something rather than the end of something, I got to say.
So, David, without knowing all the details of the investigation at this point, a couple questions about that. One, how severe do you guess the, you know, the final bottom line of sanctions will be for Tennessee? And two, do you think that, I mean, because if I don't really follow college athletics and I listened to that press conference yesterday, I think, oh my God, Jeremy Pruitt is a bad person and Tennessee cheats like crazy, and it's very different from other Power Five college football programs. So my question then, my second question is, do you think that what Tennessee has been doing goes well beyond the norm for, say, an SEC football program, or do you think this is more a case of being sloppy?
Well, I think so two things. One, I think if a lot of programs did a thorough and an internal investigation, Tennessee did, they'd probably find some similar things around the SEC. You know, just about everywhere but Vanderbilt, probably you'd find similar things. But it's different when your university is doing an internal investigation and when the NCAA does it. You know, you look at how the NCAA handled, you know, UNC or LSU or other investigations in the past. The NCAA has very, very little power. A lot of schools circle the wagons, say don't say anything, they got to prove it, so-and-so. It's a little different when a university-hired attorney says you've got to come sit down for 7 hours. You know, if the NCAA says Jeremy Pruitt, national championship-winning coach, needs to come talk to us, there's not a lot of impetus for him to talk to them. You know, they can only do so much, certainly not for 7 hours. So just the investigations are different. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, was Tennessee looking for something to fire Jeremy Pruitt? You know, I can never know exactly what those conversations were like, but I do feel pretty strongly that if Tennessee had a much better season in 2020, I think that complaint from the, you know, as they would call it, credible source, it's probably handled a little differently. I'm not sure they're paying two lawyers $825 an hour to come in and look under the hood and take a look at everything that's going on. I just think that to believe that that's the case, I think is naive. That's not how big-time college athletics operates. That's not how, you know, when you have a cash cow, things look. But if you have, you know, a motivation to say, hey, if we look at these things, you know, we can probably get out of here without paying $12 million. I mean, the motivation looks a little different. And again, you can never really know how these conversations go down. And it's not that Tennessee would try to, you know, necessarily hide these things, but I think, you know, schools don't aggressively look at themselves quite as seriously when they have, a coach that they are trying to preserve. I think that's just how things work.
David Ubbin from The Athletic on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, David, where does Tennessee go from here? Because my guess would be this job is not viewed very favorably nationally just based on the way the last coaching search went and just the environment around this program. And obviously, this can't do anything but hurt that. So how do you think this job is viewed from the coaching candidates that theoretically Tennessee is going to go out there and try to hire, some of which are going to include Power Five guys who have done it before and have proven it at this level?
Well, when you go talk to a candidate right now and they say, what's the deal with the NCAA stuff? What am I dealing with? They're not going to be able to give you a solid answer. It's a gamble at this point because you don't know, you know, how many scholarships am I going to be losing? Am I going to be dealing with a bowl ban? Am I going to be dealing with, recruiting limitations? You don't know that. But you can say it's probably not going to be a slap on the wrist. Now, that said, I think the only two candidates that you know are going to take this job regardless are Jamie Chadwell and Hugh Freeze. Those two candidates are probably going to be somewhat polarizing. I think Tennessee, is not going to just sit there and walk up to those guys and hand them a contract. They're going to talk to a lot of folks. And, of course, from the fans, you know, obviously Hugh Freeze would please some people, anger some other people. And, again, considering how much talk there was about integrity and doing things the right way, and when you look at how it ended for a few frees at Ole Miss and, you know, vacating wins, I just don't – the odds seemed a little long for him. I would say they're pretty close to zero after hearing the university leadership talk yesterday. So at that point, then you sort of have to look around and hope that somebody has their eye on this job. I think it's going to be very interesting. You know, I think – that O'Brien does make a lot of sense, but, you know, in terms of how attractive this job is going to depend on the person. But I don't think they're going to have a ton of people beating down the door to come here and, take over a pretty good roster that is probably getting worse by the day when you look at the transfer portal, and is dealing with an NCAA situation that is uncertain but serious. It's going to be tough for whoever Tennessee hires as an athletic director to come make this hire.
So I can't – I mean, among the many incredible things said yesterday at this presser, David, that I'm like, oh, the opposite of that is true. The Kevin Steele, situation, I mean, it's just – to me, Kevin Steele isn't signing up at a place with a lame duck coach unless he thinks this is a possibility and maybe he's getting his shot. Do you think it's possible that Kevin Steele – gets the 2021 season as a sort of tryout, and is there any value in that? I mean, to me, I don't know how you can really recruit well under that situation, but do you think that's possible? Do you think there's any value in it?
Well, it's definitely possible, but I think the biggest issue is I don't think fans are going to be super fired up about that. The average Tennessee fan, I don't think, is super excited about the idea of Kevin Steele taking over. And like you said, yeah, recruiting – you know, you need that early bounce. 2022 is such a crucial year in the state, huge recruiting year in the state. You've got to, win some recruiting battles in your home state there. And it's, you know, you need somebody. The idea that you're going to have this tryout and have Kevin Steele wear this interim tag for a year, I mean, that's really hard for not only him, but for assistants. You know, I remember, not to compare the two situations, but at Baylor, you had a similar situation with Jim Grobe. The assistants on that staff were just, like, not recruiting. Like, just not recruiting at all. And their class suffered because of it. And I'm not saying that would happen here, but the motivation is just not the same when you have a lame duck staff with Kevin Steele, who knows what's going to happen next year, versus everybody gets in there, year one, or head coach is on a six-year deal. You know, he's a hungry guy. It's just different. It's just different. And so I think that's possible, but I think the only scenario in which that happens is, you know, if he comes in there and wows them in an interview, which I'm sure he'll get, or, you know, Tennessee has a nice little throwback to 2017 where your options are running real thin. But again, I think Jamie Chadwell, no question, I think would take this job, and I think that's a better option than trying to play the middle ground or, you know, give the job to Kevin Steele.
David, last thing for you. What's been the reaction that you've noticed with Tennessee players, both on the roster and commits that they've had? What's been their reaction to Jeremy Pruitt being fired?
I mean, it's kind of about what you think. I mean, Jeremy Pruitt really inspired a lot of loyalty from all guys. For all of his shortcomings, his players loved him. His players loved playing for him. And that didn't ever change. And so they're disappointed. I think, you know, around our close to the program, I think there was some level of naivete over the last month of how this was really going to play out. Just talking to people, I don't think people realized that this was trending in this direction hard. I think there was some denial going on there. And I'm sure players, it's easy to sort of dismiss as like, well, that's just media rumors, or, you know, this isn't that big of a deal, or so-and-so, or he'll survive this, you know, all that. And so there was a little shock yesterday. And quite honestly, I was a little shocked at the shocking, at the players that were just really surprised. Because this has been trending in that direction for quite some time. So, you know, it's sort of predictable. I think players, you know, were sad and are going to miss the guy. And, you know, we'll see what whoever comes up next, you know, can win these guys over. I mean, Jerry Pruitt did it when he took over from Butch Jones. And we'll see whoever replaces Jerry Pruitt, kind of how that goes early on.
Well, David, if there's one thing we learned yesterday, it's that the recruiting was good for Jeremy Pruitt during his time with Tennessee. So I'm glad we cleared that up. Thanks for taking time to join us, man. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. David Ubbins.
Take a nap, David.
Has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. When we come back, we'll react to a little of what David had to say there and talk about where the Vols go from here. Who should be their target to become the next head coach at Tennessee? We'll discuss that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
What a toxic mess. What an absolutely bungled, toxic mess. If they're going to do this, it needs to be done in a timely way. And by delaying everything the way that they have put themselves in a situation that complicates the coaching search. It complicates recruiting tremendously. It makes the players that are already here think that they're going to be left holding the bag, and other recruits for down the road thinking, I don't want to be anywhere near a place like that.
That was Trevor Maddich on with Stillman and Company talking about the toxic environment at Tennessee that's been there for a long time now. We're going on more than a decade of toxicity at Tennessee at this point with their football program. Let's revisit our poll question of the day at 102.5 The Game on Twitter. Which Vols football coaching hire was the most damaging to the program? And the options are Lane Kiffin, Derek Dooley, Butch Jones, and Jeremy Pruitt. 453 votes in so far, 44% going with Derek Dooley, 21% with Jeremy Pruitt, 19% with Lane Kiffin, and 16% with Butch Jones. So Derek Dooley, Joe Rexroad, still leading this pool as the most damaging hire to the program over the course of the last 12 years.
And Butch Jones still in last place. Man. The rehabilitation of Butch Jones' image in Knoxville, well underway.
Does this make him a champion of life?
Yeah. I guess so.
I don't know if he's a champion of life yet, but he's at least a contender in life.
He's at least the champion of the poll question so far.
Yeah, so far.
That's right.
He's doing very well in this poll question. Honestly, I think I would answer Lane Kiffin. Not because of him as a coach, because I think of the four, he was by far the best coach that they've had. But just everything that went down with him leaving after 1 year, I think that sent this program into a spiral. Because you get the safe guy with Dooley after that, the guy that you think will never leave if he has success because it's Tennessee and he's a guy that's an SEC guy. His dad was in the SEC. He's got ties. And that Dooley hire was awful. Butch Jones, he had a decent amount of success and then flamed out. And obviously we know what happened with Jeremy Pruitt. And the interesting part about Jeremy Pruitt is that story is still yet to be written because, you know, you think about what could still come of this. And the NCAA repercussions, I mean, you could ask this poll question again in a couple of months, and maybe it's a completely different answer. So it's interesting to think about from that perspective. But just based on the spiral out of control that happened, I'm going Lane Kiffin in this poll question.
That's an interesting answer. See, I mean, like, I hear you. Like, what happened after Lane was obviously disastrous, but isn't that more because Dooley was the hire? I mean, I guess you can go around and around with
it. I think Dooley was the hire because of Lane and how crazy he was and the NCAA stuff that came with it and him leaving the way that he did. Dooley felt like the quote unquote safe guy.
Right. It's just like when you talk about damaging, I mean, you couldn't have known, you know, that Lane was going to bolt. And I actually believe, like, I believe what Lane said at the time, which is like basically USC is the only job he was going to leave for. Now, I will say that this may not have been internally inspired because he would have won enough to keep that from happening. I think David laid that out perfectly. Like, if any school wanted to do something like this and get people involved and really investigate itself, oh, we'd see a whole bunch of interesting investigations going on. They don't do that. What they do is, let's figure out how we can protect our coach when the NCAA comes calling. Now, the NCAA may have, in the Lane Kiffin case, at some point, come calling, and then, you know, that may have been bad. But if I was voting in this poll, I would pick Dooley just because I just think his, like, when you have multiple recruiting cycles where you fall off that much, I think there's a lasting effect.
So as you look ahead here, Tennessee obviously has some decisions to make. You've got to hire a new athletics director, and then that athletics director is going to have to hire a new coach. And you heard David Ubben talk about it in the last segment. Yeah, I think Hugh Freeze, as ridiculous as I think this has been for a long time here, I think there's zero chance that happens now. And it's the SEC, so I probably shouldn't say zero because we see crazy stuff happen all the time, but I just don't know how, if you're Tennessee, you can get up there and put on that show that you put on yesterday at that press conference about integrity and about all these different things that your program and your institution stands for, and then come out and get Hugh Freeze and bring him into the fold. Like, I don't see them going down that road. I think optically it would be awful. And number two, I don't think the SEC would allow that to happen at this point based on Hugh Freeze and his track record. So I would say he's pretty much out the door in terms of consideration at this point. What do you think of maybe Jamie Chadwell and the name David brought up there in terms of being a fit for this Tennessee program, a guy that you know would be interested in the job? Maybe that's the route they end up going. I don't see a circumstance where Kevin Steele hangs around in 2021 and he's just the coach. I know some people have thrown that out there. We've had a couple people on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, toss that out there. I don't anticipate that happening this year for Tennessee. I think it's too hard to overcome that in recruiting. And your players that are there right now, what would you hang around for if Kevin Steele is the guy? They don't know Kevin Steele. They didn't commit to Kevin Steele. I just don't see a scenario where that happens.
I agree. I mean, I think Kevin Steele's going to end up getting paid a nice chunk of money for being in Knoxville for a few weeks. Because you can't give up a year. And to David's point, what kind of staff recruiting is going to go on? It's going to be hard enough to recruit if you had a staff working hard for, you know, to basically set up the next staff to have good players.
Yeah.
What kind of results are you going to get? They wouldn't be good. So really, you just be setting yourself back. You have to find an AD quickly, and your AD has to make a hire. Listen, we're not allowed to root for things, Robbie, but I will tell you that the idea of a press conference in which we get to hear Randy Boyd and Donde Plowman talk about Hugh Freeze and what a paragon of virtue he is, I mean, it warms my heart.
A redeemed man.
I so badly want this to happen. But, I actually think that there's a line of hypocrisy that you don't quite cross, even in college athletics. I mean, it's a high bar, and Tennessee is a trendsetter in this way. Yeah, I don't think that happens. I think Jamie Chadwell could be good. I mean, again, Jamie Chadwell right now, his profile, compare it to Jeremy Pruitt and his profile 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Jeremy Pruitt was a good DC at a place that had way better players than everybody else. And he had been at three programs that had way better players than everybody else. And he'd never been a head coach. Jamie Chadwell, now he's got his own NCAA stuff, but it's not nearly to the level of what's being alleged here or the level of what Hugh Freeze had at Ole Miss. So I think you could get around that. And I think it's an interesting possibility. He's a Tennessee guy. His offense is one of the most – it might be the most fun offense to watch. Does that play and work in the SEC? You know, because you got to be able to throw the football, and it's more of – it's kind of like a triple option that you morph into. You still throw it more than most – you know, well, certainly than any triple option offense. Right. It's a melding of two systems. Can that work in the SEC? I don't know. I think it'd be fun to see someone try. And you know, it's not the worst thing in the world, but I mean, I'd go for other candidates first. I mean, I think you have to shoot higher than that. I just really don't know at this point. There are just so many reasons to be dubious of Tennessee if you're a coaching candidate right now.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Kevin from Clarksville texts in and says, Jeff Fisher to Tennessee, Adam Gase as the offensive coordinator, and Wade Phillips as the defensive coordinator. Bam! We've had a couple people text in and say Jeff Fisher should be the hire for Tennessee. Do you think that there's any chance whatsoever that happens?
No, but I hope Jeff Fisher campaigns publicly for it. I would enjoy that happening. You know, Jeff Fisher. I mean, Jeff Fisher is, for all the 8-8 jokes and everything, pretty good football coach. I mean, the real, if you want to get serious about Jeff Fisher in a job like this, like I just a guy who's been strictly an NFL coach. I don't think that's a good idea. It's such a different job, you know.
Yeah.
And you're going to start now in this year at a place like that. You're going to start getting into, hey, so how's this recruiting calendar work? I just that along with just the fact that I think you can do. I mean, you got to be younger and energetic. You got to find an up and coming coach probably, unless you can get someone like a Gus Malzahn, someone like, I mean, look, I'm a big proponent of Tom Allen. I've been writing it. I'll say it again. I think Tom Allen from Indiana should be called, and my God, please don't ever tell me again how Jeremy Pruitt beat Tom Allen in a bowl game. I don't give a crap. He also has way better players. Do you understand what Indiana football is? I mean, it's what he's done has been tremendously impressive. Also, he's a Hugh Freeze protege, which is interesting, but I would go there. I'd go to Fickell. I'd go to Campbell. I got all those guys, and maybe you get lucky, but I think you're probably going to end up settling on someone at the Jamie Chadwell level.
We're going to have your opportunity to win again at Preds Pick to Click coming up at 8:45. We've had two for two so far in Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. So make sure you're tuned in for that coming up at 8:45. We'll also have your chance in the 9 o'clock hour to hear the cue to call to win a pair of tickets to see the Preds take on the Carolina Hurricanes tonight at Bridgestone Arena. So a lot still to come on that front here in the show. When we come back, we'll continue to get your reaction to what's gone down in Knoxville. Who should Tennessee target to become their next head coach? Let us know on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Make sure you're tuning in on Thursday from 4 to 6 p.m. for the off-season preview show as Jared Stillman, Chris Sanders, and Teron Davenport break down the upcoming off-season for the Two-Tone Blue. Thursday's off-season preview show is brought to you by Corner Pub, Farm Bureau Health Plans, your Middle Tennessee Kubota dealers, and Wholesale Inc., powered by RumbleOn.com. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Getting your reaction, who should be the next head coach for the Tennessee Volunteer Football Program? Let us know on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe, we've got a lot of text to get to, so I will get started right away. Got a texter that says, do you think Mac Brown could be pulled from the University of North Carolina after what he's done in rebuilding that program? So, thinking outside the box a little bit there. What do you think about the idea of luring Mac Brown away from North Carolina?
I wouldn't think so. I think that's his last job. He kind of came back home for that job. He's done a really nice job. He's got things rolling there, you know, and he's got a good situation there by all accounts. And, you know, that's something that coaches really value. And, you know, if you're going to go the Mack Brown route, I wonder if anyone's out there saying David Cutcliffe.
Yeah.
He has been mentioned in, you know, in past, obviously, Ball's coaching searches. And I would actually say that the same answer on him, by the way. I think this is his last job. He's had a real nice situation there. The pressure is quite low. He's done some good things. But I would say both of those guys are going to retire in the jobs they have right now.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Kevin texts in and throws out Mark Richt being a good hire for Tennessee. What do you think about Mark Richt maybe getting back into the coaching world? Did not go well at Miami. What do you think about him maybe coming back into the SEC?
I mean, it's not the worst idea I've ever heard. You know, he's kind of a non-starter out there. After, like you said, Miami went really poorly. He did a really good job at Georgia. He wasn't able to, you know, get them over the hump. And of course, Kirby Smart hasn't been able to do that either. He's been closer. He's taken it another step. But Mark Richt had a very good tenure at Georgia. I think the Miami thing scares you off a little bit because it was bad. And, you know, at some point, it's kind of like musical bands, you know, like they have a certain amount of good music in them. Like I haven't wanted to listen to a new Rolling Stones song for, 35 years. And, you know, but I still love, I mean, I still think the stuff they did for 20 years was incredible. I don't know. Mark Richt is 60 years old. Like, I don't think that's the craziest idea, but I'd really want assurances that, you know, that Miami was an outlier and that he has the energy to do something like this.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texture that says, I'm not a huge Tennessee fan, but I would like to see them be competitive again. Why wouldn't they go for someone like Luke Fickell at Cincinnati? He fits the mold of a coach and stability that they need. And, Joe, you've heard me talk about Luke Fickell as a target that I would have if I'm Tennessee going out to Cincinnati and poaching him away. But the other side of that is right now, like if I'm Luke Fickell, number one, you're not an SEC guy anyway. But number two, I don't really know what the incentive is to go to Tennessee right now if you're Luke Fickell. I mean, the payment's going to be there, and obviously it's a historical program. But if Luke Fickell keeps doing what he's doing at Cincinnati, there's going to be a whole lot of big boy programs calling Luke Fickell's name, and I don't know that Tennessee is the route I would go right now if I'm him.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with the texter. Absolutely. You go after Luke Fickell. I mean, that's a no-brainer. A year ago, he turned down about $4 million from Michigan State and stayed at Cincinnati. And by the way, if you want to talk parallels there, Michigan State had some stuff with the Board of Trustees that kind of scared him off, you know, wasn't totally sure top down whether, you know, the leadership was all on the same page. That was, I believe, part of why he didn't end up going there. Well, if he looks at Tennessee right now, what's he going to say? I mean, you're going to have to throw a lot of money at him. And, man, I don't know. I mean, you can say, hey, you'd only be 3 hours away from your best friend, Mike Vrabel. The Balls and the Titans, Vrabel and Fickell, huh? You know, I just have a hard time seeing him wanting to leave his situation. He's got a great situation there. And I think Luke Fickell probably only leaves that job for something like Notre Dame. Certainly, you know, if Ohio State were to open, but there's no reason to think it will anytime soon. If for him to have another shot at Ohio State, he would do that. But I don't think Tennessee makes the cut for him.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, Tom Herman to Tennessee. He's got a proven winning record, and he's offensive-minded. And, Joe, we talked a little bit about Tom Herman earlier in the show. He's a very intriguing guy to me because, obviously, at Texas, it didn't go as well as Texas hoped it would go. They move on from Tom Herman. They've now hired Steve Sarkisian. But Herman's at an interesting point in his career. He's at his place where the next place he goes to be a head coach, you've got to be pretty sure about it, and you've got to be pretty sure that it's going to work, because if it doesn't work out there, then I'm interested to see how Herman is viewed as they move forward. So, look, I think Tennessee should be interested in Tom Herman. I absolutely would make that call. But if I'm Herman, with how much is on the line in his career personally, I don't know with everything going on in Tennessee right now if that's worth the risk.
Now, if you're a Tennessee fan and you're like, oh, Tom Herman, I mean, please get over yourself and look closely at what he's done. you know, look, he won 32 games in 4 years at Texas, including this shortened season, which is not good enough. That's why he got fired, because Texas's expectations are we've never left the national championship upper crust of college football, even though it's not true. I mean, their expectations are well beyond Tennessee, and obviously he's a victim of that. But my gosh, it wasn't like his tenure was a disaster. They didn't win enough. They weren't good enough. I'm not convinced they wouldn't have gotten there. He did really good job at Houston before that. I mean, when he left Houston, he was the most coveted coach in the country. I mean, he was the hottest candidate for a Power Five job that there was, including LSU trying to get him. So obviously his star has faded some, but I think he would be a very intriguing hire, someone you definitely call. I expect him this year to be in the NFL in some capacity. That's secondhand information. We'll see if that's how it turns out. I think, like you said, Robbie, for him, you go somewhere and it doesn't go well, and now things are just going the other way for you. So I think it kind of makes sense to take a year or two, get some experience in the pro game, and have your resume. You know, it's nice to have both things on your resume and go from there. But, yeah, there's another guy that, I mean, Tennessee should absolutely be calling him.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, Will Muschamp, he sure knows how to win in Neyland. Man, I tell you what, if Will Muschamp gets offered this job, Tennessee fans are going to riot.
He's got to be like, I mean, here's an example. Will Muschamp is a great example. Like, how does it keep happening? I think he's a nice, fiery coordinator. Where is he, by the way? Has he been picked up somewhere?
I think he got offered to be DC by Sarkisian at Texas and turned it down.
He turned it down.
That was the report I saw.
Yeah, I mean, There's an example of someone who he should just be a good coordinator somewhere and be happy with that and do well and make a lot of money, make seven figures, and that's what you are.
Yeah, and, you know, watching him yell at somebody on the sideline would certainly be entertaining and have borderline an aneurysm on the sideline over there. But other than that, I don't see much attraction in bringing in Will Muschamp. Let's go to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com one more time. I got a text that says, how about Will Healy? And we talked about Will Healy for the Vanderbilt job and how we both believe that one day he's going to be a pretty good Power 5 coach. I don't think Will Healy's ready for Tennessee.
I think, you know, he was in Bruce, you know, our Bruce Feldman always, you know, lists out possible candidates, and he was in that list from Bruce yesterday, and I think it's worth having him on that list. I have my questions about whether he would be able to get that job right now. I mean, look, it's one of those situations where you might grab him and 5 years from now say, my gosh, you found a rising star. I mean, when Clemson decided to make Dabo Swinney the full-time coach, there was not a lot of excitement in the college football world or in the Clemson world. I mean, sometimes it works out. So, you know, I think it's worth looking at him. I'd be surprised if he's quite done enough to get it. You know, another guy people are talking about, Gerard Mayo, who is a rising young star as an NFL position coach with the Patriots, obviously Tennessee ties, and, you know, he's one of those guys who it's just like, do you hand it over to someone like that now and risk, you know, just you don't quite have the experience to handle all this stuff. And then what, and then the program goes further the wrong direction. Now his career is damaged. It would be a big risk, but I mean, I think that's someone like that at this point where you are, it's worth at least the discussion and the investigation of is there someone young who you could catch before everyone wants them and, you know, find something that works. I mean, Tennessee is to the point where it should be open to a lot of different things.
It should be. And a big part of this is going to be who takes the athletics director job, who comes in here and is going to be the next AD. What sort of coach does that AD look for? I mean, that's going to be a big part of this. So still a lot to be told in this story with Tennessee football. And I tell you what, we'll be paying close attention over the course of the next couple of weeks. When we come back, it's that time of the day, time for Pred's Pick to Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. You can have the opportunity to call in, and if you're the first caller, you can give us your goal score for the game tonight for the Predators against Carolina. And if they score a goal, you win a prize pack brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. We're 2 for 2 so far. Let's see if we can make it 3 for 3. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Preds Pick the Click coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, The Game. And it's that time of the day, time for Preds Pick the Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. We'll do this every Preds game day here on the show, Robbie and Rex Road. You have your opportunity to pick a goal scorer for the Nashville Predators in their game that night, tonight coming up against the Carolina Hurricanes. And if they score, you will win a prize pack brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. Let's go to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in Seth, who is today's participant in Preds Pick to Click. Seth, thanks for joining us. What's going on?
Not much, guys. That's the word.
So, Seth, there is some pressure on you in this competition. We're 2 for 2 so far. Forsberg and Victor Arvidsson were chosen by our listeners in the first two games. Both of those guys scored in this competition, so there's pressure on you to make it 3 for 3. Do you think you're up to it?
I'm going to give it a shot. I think I am.
All righty. So without further ado, Seth, who is your Pred Pick to Click for tonight's game against Carolina?
All right. Normally I'd go with Phil because he's my guy, but I'm going to go with Matt Duchene because he's been close a couple times.
I like – look, Matt Duchene was flying around out there last night. So you think as close as he was last night, he's able to get one home tonight and get on the board for the season?
Yep, that's the pick.
I like it. Seth, thanks for calling in for Preds Pick to Click. We appreciate it, and good luck.
All right, guys. Have a good morning.
Absolutely. You as well. So Matt Duchene is the selection by Seth, and that's a good sign for Matt Duchene, who, by the way, will join us again tomorrow at 9 o'clock here on the show, Robbie and Rex Road, as he does every week. So looking forward to that conversation with Duchene. And hopefully for Seth's sake, he scored a goal in tonight's game at that point as well. So the listeners have had much better luck in this competition than I have so far. I am 0-2. The listeners are 2-2. Joe, we've got some work to do to make up some ground tonight as well. So, Joe Rexrode, you led us off yesterday. We're going to switch gears and let Ryan Porth lead us off today in Preds Pick to Click. Porth, who is your Pred Pick to Click?
I am going to double down on the one that I picked yesterday.
Oh, man.
Roman Josi did not score last night, so I'm going to put my eggs in that basket again and say Roman Josi gets a goal tonight against the Carolina Hurricanes.
Very nice. The captain had a couple chances on the power play last night when they allowed the power play to continue. A lot of penalties taken right after the power play began last night, and Roman Josi did not quite get it in there. So
if he does not score tonight, I am not taking him on Friday.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
Just FYI.
All right. Joe Rexrode, who is your Pred Pick to Click for tonight?
Well, I'm an idiot for not taking Forsberg the other day, and I'm not going to make that mistake again. I'm picking Forsberg until he doesn't score in a game. Give me Philip Forsberg all day long.
Forsberg has goals in 3 games in a row to begin the season. If he scores tonight, he will tie his own franchise record for most consecutive games to begin the season with a goal. And another pretty one last night. Great pass from Dante Fabbro on that play, and Forsberg puts one home, and he's off to an impressive start this season. So, very nice pick, Joe Rexrode. Philip Forsberg is your selection. We saw Arvidsson last night. Duchene was my selection yesterday. I'm going to go a little bit off the board today. I say Ryan Ellis. I think Ryan Ellis is going to score today. He wound up a few last night from the point. Obviously, we know what he's capable of with that shot. I think he gets a look on the power play tonight. Ryan Ellis puts one home. Ryan Ellis, my selection today. So Porth and I going with 2 defensemen in this competition. I don't know if that's a smart play. We'll find out.
We'll see.
I don't like my chances.
Ellis came closer last night than Josi, it seemed like.
I know. So hopefully he's able to get that done tonight. What did you think of the game last night? Hockey is so funny to me because, honestly, of the 3 games that they played, you know, you win the first 2 against Columbus. That game against Carolina last night, even though you lose the game 4-2, I thought that might have been their best game from start to finish in terms of just the consistency in which you're attacking the offensive zone. You got to have a little bit more finish to your game, and Duchene and Forsberg had a lot of chances last night. Johansson had a lot of chances last night. Arvidsson finally broke through and got one. He had chances before the goal last night. So a lot of looks, only 2 goals to show for it. But I thought from start to finish last night, that was about as complete of a game as they played so far.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think basically you're playing an opponent who can really hurt you coming back the other way. And that's what we saw, you know, and we saw some missed opportunities that quickly turned into golden opportunities for Carolina, and they cashed in. But I thought it was a really well-played hockey game by the Preds. And, you know, Arvidsson finally got one, but he was close so much. And I love the pick of Duchesne tonight for the pick to click. I mean, that guy is he is really all over the place right now. Love how he's playing. And I think it's just a matter of time if he keeps playing like that.
So that was our edition of Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. And, Joe, you bring up Victor Arvidsson there. Scary moment again for Victor Arvidsson last night in the game. He leaves. He got tripped on the play and basically went uncalled into the boards there. Philip Forsberg took exception with it after the play. And all of a sudden, Victor Arvidsson's on the bench. He's in pretty obvious pain. Goes down the tunnel to be looked at in the locker room. And fortunately, is able to come back in the game and later score a goal in the game. But another example last night of Predators fans holding their breath when it comes to Victor Arvidsson and his health.
And it's just, I mean, look, I said it going in the season or maybe even just the other day. I mean, that's my concern with him is he is, he's getting older, he's little, and people love to beat the crap out of him. You know, I mean, the way he plays, he bothers people. They take their shots at him when they can. And I just, he's dealing with something, you know, and that's just, it's really, to me, it's concerning moving forward with him because he's such a key part of this team. If they're going to have enough production, enough goal production, that line has to be intact. All those guys have to produce. And the injury issues with Arvidsson are not getting, you know, they're not diminishing, they're increasing.
And then Pekka makes his first start of the season last night for the Predators. And look, if you look at the numbers in that game, I mean, you're not going to be very impressed. It's not going to blow you away. Three goals allowed by Rene in the game, an .870 save percentage last night. And I did think, though, he made some big-time saves in the game. The Predators had some breakdowns on either in-zone turnovers that they had or on transition on opportunities they missed on the other side of the ice. And Rene, I thought, made some huge saves in that game. So I think you look at the numbers and think maybe he played poorly. There's really one goal I can think of that Carolina scored in that game that maybe you'd like to have back, maybe you want to see Rene make a save on, and that was Trocheck's goal, which was the second of the game for Carolina. I mean, Svechnikov on the power play, he just ripped it, and he's becoming one of the most fun players in the league to watch. And then you have the two-on-one with Svechnikov and Aho for the third goal of the game for Carolina, which good luck to any goaltender in the league stopping those two when they're barreling down on you like that. I thought the one goal that maybe you'd like to have back if you're Pekka was the one by Trocheck. Grimaldi turns it over in the zone, and Trocheck just basically spins around and fires from the circle. But other than that, I thought a pretty good game for Pekka Rinne.
Yeah, I mean, that's one where he really wasn't screened, I don't think, so you hope he makes that save. That was, by the way, that was my pick to click. Grimaldi, who did not score, but he did set that goal up.
He did.
With the turnover in the defensive zone. But, yeah, that was – I agree. I mean, you want that one back if you're Pekka Rinne. I thought overall he looked good. You know, I think so far the goaltending for this team in three games has been encouraging.
I do too, and it's one of those things last night where defensively you've got problems in transition. I thought a lot of it came from just lack of execution offensively. They had their chances. They had their looks. I'm thinking back to that two-on-one we talked about with Svechnikov and Aho, and it basically stemmed from, you know, Josi and Arvidsson are in the offensive zone trying to make a play. You try to connect across the ice. I think it was Arvidsson that missed the net. And all of a sudden, you miss the net. Yossi's down low. Arvidsson's basically behind the goal line on that play. And there goes Carolina. It just gets springboarded up for a two-on-one on that play. So sometimes those transition opportunities that you get burned on, it comes down to execution on the other side and at least making sure that you hit the net so you don't get burned going the other way. And obviously, that's a lot easier said than done. But I thought that burned the Predators a few times last night.
Yeah, this is a really good team. I mean, this is a great measuring stick for you. And again, it's not just that anymore this year. It's like whoever you're measuring yourself against, you know, it's like in the past, it's like, well, you get a couple shots at Tampa Bay to show, you know, if you can play with the best. Well, now, like, you're going to play them a bunch. And the same with these guys. But I mean, so far, you know, in three games, I think overall the Preds have played well. And I think they've acquitted themselves, you know, well in these games. One thing certainly you want to see is that power play to come to life. But I did think there were some good power plays last night in that game with a lot of good opportunities and chances.
There were, and then you finally break through on Arvidsson's goal later in that game on the power play. So maybe some positive momentum heading in that direction. And tonight, I'm interested to see how Carolina handles this. I mean, you're without Jordan Staal. He's on the COVID list right now. He's very important for them, especially in the faceoff circle. And you lost Teuvo Teravainen last night. He had three shifts in the second and third periods combined, kind of tweaked something. And Rod Brind'Amour, Hurricanes head coach, has no idea what his status is going to be for tonight. So going to be interesting to see what Carolina's lineup look like, and we'll see if the Predators can respond with a win tonight to get to 3-1 on the season. When we come back, it's that time of the week. Our man Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports will join us. We'll get into the NFL playoffs with him and take a look at the situation brewing in Houston with Deshaun Watson as well. All of that coming up. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.